Pelador Podcast.
Welcome back to the Pelador GA Football Podcast. Delighted to be always, as always, joined by Ross Traynor. Ross, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, Mick. How is your good self?
Good, all good. Yeah, can't complain now. Tuesday morning here. Tuesday afternoon here after school, so I'm fairly happy out. And joined by Carlo footballer Paul Broderick. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no bother, lads. Glad to be part of it.
Yes, you're a teacher yourself, so how's it going for you?
Yeah, well, I won't say a hard day's work, but home from a day's work, anyway. Tuesday's one of my easier days, so it's all ahead of me still. My hump in the week doesn't end until Thursday, so yeah, it's grand. It's good to be back, a bit of routine.
We were just talking off air about the whole Leaving Cert situation. So how did you find that yourself?
I suppose it was kind of, it was a tricky process at first, like, but normally, when Leaving Certs come in yesterday, which would have been your normal mid-August, you'd have chats with them and you'd know whether they're happy or sad. But I suppose maybe no news is good news, but I haven't heard anything back from any of them at this stage. So, I think the results in general, it seemed yesterday, were up. So I think people are going to be happy. The only one thing I did read there today is it might affect maybe students coming back with previous year's points to try to get into courses this year. So that could be a bit of a conundrum needs kind of solving. But yeah, no, I'll go to my place anyway, it seems. No bricks through the window yet, so.
No bricks through the window, no brown envelopes either, no?
No brown envelopes, no. None that I'm willing to speak about anyway.
But I suppose over the last few months then, how's it been for you? Obviously, no football then and stuff before the club came back.
Yeah, I suppose you're, so at first you're mad, you don't know how long it's going to be, like no one did, you know, and then it kind of wore off after a while. Like I went hell for leather for about 6 weeks training wise, and so you're doing everything, like everyone was, bits in the garden and stuff at home, and then like you're kind of like, Jesus, how long are we going to be in this, or you know, what are we actually training for? Like, so I was doing a lot of running thinking I'd be going back to football, and then I kind of veered off that and started, once gyms open back up, kind of been focusing on that side of things since. But the club are back 9 or 10 weeks at the moment. And the Carlow Championship started last weekend, so it's in the thick of it at the moment.
Well, how did it go for you so far, the first weekend?
We lost. No, I'm actually not playing at the moment myself. Just health circumstances, really, that I've opted out for the time being. It's not a permanent thing. I'm just kind of, suppose, need more information until I can make a decision. But we lost by a point to, if you were to kind of see teams in Carlow, like there's 8 senior teams and you've like 3 of the top 4 being our group of 4. So we needed to get a win on the board and we didn't. Like it was a hard affair, and it was 6 points to 5. It was a wet night, like, so it was tough going. Tough going to watch anyway, whatever we're being part of. But and they were like, it was us and all Auckland, and they're probably the team we would have been looking to beat each other, and that's kind of safety guaranteed. Not that there's no relegation, but it means progression guaranteed, we'll say. And then you've Pal and Rathfilly next, and they're kind of like, Pal would have been in the last 2 finals. Rathfilly have won probably 3 championships in the last 10 years, so like, you know, they're the 2 tougher games you would imagine on paper anyway. They're who we've next to play.
6 points to 5, they could have done with you on the pitch.
I don't know about that, but and it was hard conditions though for both sides. It was just a downpour, like, and then you know, you've kind of, with the water breaks, I suppose lads nearly getting cold and going back out. It was a funny one, like, and it's obviously it's the first game I'm kind of involved a little bit in the coaching side of it, so like it's the first game I've gotten to and been to and kind of witness these water breaks. And while I think they're, you know, they're a good thing for what's going on, the whole COVID thing, it's we were 4-2 up going into one of them, and then we went 6-4 down, you know, in the next 15, and immediately it's a real GA thing. I think that, like, the, you know, the recency kind of reaction is just to go, you know, if we had no water break, we would have been 6-4 or whatever would have been up, like. But it's just the way it went. It was like chances were kind of at a premium, and we didn't get enough of them. We probably needed 10 to convert 1 the way it was, like.
So you prefer if the water breaks were done with long term?
I don't know. No, I tell you, to be honest, I think they could, like, if you're looking at, if we won the game 6-5, I'd be talking up the other side of my mouth. So I don't have enough of it to say, like, that was the kind of narrative that was coming out saying that, you know, we lost momentum. But I'd say if I was to hand you a tape of the game, will you be asleep within 10 minutes? But if I was to hand you a tape of the game and watch it, I don't think you would have agreed we had any momentum at any stage. So, but yeah, look, it's still all to play for. If you look at two games and like you look at Incarlo in any given year, Airog have been strong the last 3 years. But outside of Airog, anyone, you know, in the last 2 years, we beat Pal last year. We would have beaten Rafilly in the last three or four. It's not insurmountable. Like, you know, it's just, it's kind of, it's an uphill battle. That's all.
You were you obviously just mentioned that you're opting out at the moment. Is that a long term thing, do you think, with Carlo this season? Are you gone for the whole year, or
I don't know. I suppose it's a tough question to answer the way things are. I suppose what happened with me was I went back training initially, just it was non-contact or whatever for the first couple of weeks, and then I have a cousin who's a GP, and I spoke to my own GP, and basically my own circumstance, I've no spleen since I was 18. And I've a heart condition since birth, but neither of those have ever affected me playing sport, would say. So I don't know what really came over me, because I wouldn't be someone that kind of would be overly, I generally would take a risk, you know, when it comes to something like this. So I just happened to be chatting to a cousin of mine, and I mentioned it, and she said, look, her own opinion would be that at the moment there's not enough data, it's unknown what would, well, the two unknowns were, number one, how likely would you be to get it on a GA field, and number two, the other unknown was what would happen to me given the condition, say if I did. And I suppose that's 10 weeks ago now, so it's only recently, like only this week, I've been chatting to through the GPA to get a kind of a sports medicine perspective on it, to see if, look, in the last 10 or 12 weeks, is there any data that could help those two questions really, and try to get back. Particularly like at the weekend there, I was at our game obviously, and then I commentated on another game the day after in the opposite group, and you'd have a hunger for it, you know, you're watching it and talking about it, and like, I'm no spring chicken, so like, if I was 25, it'd be easy to go, right, I'll just opt out for, I'll make it a full year, and I'll be clear about it. So that's, I suppose, why it's hard to answer your question. Like, I'd love to be playing for Tyrone this weekend, and it's the end of the day when these, I was expecting, I suppose, a yes or no from these people I spoke to, say in the mat or the GPs, etc., but like, it's not, it's kind of like, this is the advice we give you, and you kind of have to be sensible about it. So speaking to my own family and stuff, the way I looked at it was, you know, without the data there in front of me, if something does happen to me, it's them I'm doing a disservice, you know what I mean? If someone has to sit in a hospital bed beside me and look at me kind of suffer, and while they thought, you know, the prevailing answer was, look, most likely you're strong, fit and healthy, and you'll get through it, but what lasting effect it could have. And I suppose at that stage, that was the story. And then, as I said, only recently I've kind of looked for, as you do in these things now, it's kind of second or third, you can call a fourth opinion at this stage, just to see, you know, there might be some data now to say. I know Ronan Glynn has kind of been tight-lipped about the chief medical officer, about how many GA cases he has, and I suppose you can't blame him, because he wants to leave it at, you know, I imagine the GA community would jump on him and say, well, there's been no cases, we should let people at the games. But I'd love to just see some of the data for my own personal, probably, you know, my selfish rationale type of thing, just to kind of see what the story is. But yeah, that's where it's at the moment anyway.
And were the GPA able to help you, or is it even a question that they've been asked before from other players?
I don't know if they're asked before. So like, one thing about GPA, when it does come to welfare and stuff, like, they're, you know, they're spot on. I basically sent an email on Sunday night, and I got a phone call from a rep yesterday, and I could told them a story or whatever, and the details have already been passed to sports medicine, a doctor that they work with over the Santry. So like, I'm waiting to hear back now at the moment, or a phone call, I suppose, is probably the way it's going to go, or a Zoom meeting maybe like this. And again, I don't expect a yes or a no, but I just, maybe this person would have access to stuff that I wouldn't, and kind of tell you, look, like, obviously the words I'd love to hear are, you know, you're just as likely to pick up something and work there as you are on the field, and to be honest with you, someone with your conditions or your age, you'll be fine, do you know? And if I heard that, I'm kind of going, right, they're not going to say yes, but that's a yes to me, like, do you know? So that's where I'm at the moment, yeah. It's funny, because I haven't actually spoken about it, and probably because I knew very little about it, so I probably felt foolish 10 weeks ago, because I'm someone who's like fit and healthy, I felt foolish, anyone that asked me anything about it, I wanted to speak very little about it, but only that I kind of, you know, that it's moved on, and it's 10 weeks time, and I'm looking at it in a more positive light, whereas I was thinking, you know, when will I get back there a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I don't want it to be the end, obviously, because you're not really ending on your own terms. You know what I mean? You're kind of saying, like, I'm looking at it there the weekend, and as much as, right, a game with 6-5 and lashing rain, you're not going to make much of an impact, but you're thinking to yourself, and it's an easy game on the sideline, but you're thinking to yourself, geez, I'd love to be out there. You know yourselves, like, you just want to be playing. So, like, yeah, that's kind of the way it is.
What about school then? I suppose when you go to school, is that something you worry about even going into the secondary school situation?
I'd say, yeah, to use the word, I did think about it. I wouldn't say I was worried, like, as in, we had a form to fill out, so like you answer no different to yourself. It'd say you fill out, you know, yeah, it was either yes to them all or no to them all. I can't remember about symptoms, and one of them would say they were all yeses, and I had a no down at the end. Was, you know, do you have any condition that worth mentioning or whatever? So if you do, you had to contact your own, or I think it's Medmark or the crowd. So I contacted them and went through it, and the four categories they have. I think it's like vulnerable is the top, and then you've high. And I don't know, low and moderate, I'm not sure which order they're in, but like they stuck me in high and said you can go back to work. So I was happy just to get back to work and get back to normal. But it was kind of that, to be honest with you, that made me think, well, if I'm being sent in here, now I don't know how, you know, I think they want everyone back to work, to be honest with you anyway. So like, particularly teachers have had a lot of time off. So like, they're going to try and get you back unless you're, you know, unless you can take yes to every single ailment on it. I think I was going to be sent back. But basically, and I did want to go back, but it's like, I'm kind of looking at it as in that kind of, you know, opened the window, gave me a bit of light and said, gee, should I recheck this now and see if there's, you know, I know the word high risk sounds serious, but I'm still in there. Like, people who have no risk, I'm working beside them. The conditions aren't any different. So, like, high risk and no risk to me are the same when you're going back to work. So I'm wondering, is it the same with GAA? Like, could I just play away and would it be fine? That's all.
Yeah. Obviously, with the lockdown and everything like that, people probably had a lot of time to think. And we were doing a few podcasts over the lockdown and people were sending perspective on life now. Has your kind of, so has your opinion on how committed you are to GAA and into county changed? Are people going to be maybe taking more time off, not being so serious with the gym and the extras? You were just saying there even about you're thinking of your family if you got sick in situations like that.
Yeah, I suppose I was probably thinking that you could be letting them down, like, as in, because they're all aware of the decision I would have to make. They knew it wasn't a straight yes or no. Like, they knew I was just dealing with whatever opinions I got. And it's funny, I even asked one of the nurses I was talking to in the matter, and I was like, she deals with congenital heart stuff, and I was asking her, I said, look, if I was your son, and she just laughed and goes, I can't give you that answer. I was saying, well, would you let him go or would you tell him whatever? Like, and she was just laughing, but I kind of, after these couple of these calls, I just realized that, right, you have to make the decision yourself. But sorry, I've rambled there and I forgot to, what was the initial question yet?
Just the commitment to GAA, is it too serious now, or like the change?
Sorry, Michael, yeah, perspective wise, I suppose what I realized, and I spoke to Dan St. Ledger about this and John Murphy at the time. I was doing a lot of running with John Murphy, Carloman as well, a lot of time, and at the same time, and we were kind of thinking like to ourselves, you don't realize the bubble you're in until you come out of it. Like, I wouldn't have said I was in any bubble because you're loving it. Like, and particularly the last few years of Carlo, and I know from the outside, like with that, and I've spoken about that before, that like to anyone else that just looks like normal, well, you're lucky, you're still back in Division 4. But where we came from, kind of what we've been doing, like the amount of games we've been losing, and you know, with generally no style of play kind of thing, and to have a focus and have a system that was working and be winning the majority of our games, like under the management we had, and having everyone that could kind of possibly play for Carlo, outside of maybe a couple of hurlers, we were in that bubble, and looking back at it now, certainly in a bubble. But I think the first 6 or 8 weeks were brilliant, like the lockdown for me from a kind of a mental perspective. And even like, I loved the fact that I could go running at 7 in the morning, which didn't really happen now, but I could go running at 10 in the morning, say I could go running at 1 the day, 6 in the day, whatever it'd be like. And you kind of, you know, if you didn't want to go, you didn't have to go. And you get used to that freedom very quickly. Like, I suppose I'm back into a bit of a structure now because of work, and I'm at all the club trainings, kind of in the background there. So like, I think you go through stages. It was a cycle. Like, I realized the bubble I was in, I was loving being out of it, but now, as because there seems to be something that's stopping me getting back in, I'm mad to get back into it. And to be honest with you, like, chatting to even lads, you know, anyone that I know that's retired in the last 2 or 3 years would tell you that, like, you know, keep going if you can, like, bar, you know, when the body lets you, just that, you know, the first year is the hardest, like. And I kind of feel like that now. I don't feel retired, but I feel looking at it, geez, if I don't play again, it is very hard. Like, it takes a mental toll knowing that, especially, I'd say a lot of lads when they retire first as well, they kind of think, geez, I could keep going. You know, there has to be, there's nobody going, like, I don't think anyway, like, immediately when they feel like they're at a retirement age, I'm done, you know, unless they were feeling that way for 3 years in a row. But But yeah, definitely, it gives you a bit of a different perspective, all right.
So you would find it very tough to step away right now?
I would, yeah. I stepped away completely from the club when I kind of just broke the news to them, like, and said, look, I'm going to be just, I kind of call it temporarily out or whatever for the time being. And I stepped away for about the first probably 5-6 weeks of training and just completely away from it. And like, I missed it, like I really missed it, but I wanted to give myself a chance. I was like, I suppose I thought it was just kind of, you're toying with yourself being back out there and there's no real gap. I said, go away from it and kind of see if you really do miss it. And I knew that wasn't, it's not as if I gave it up because I wanted to see if I miss it, but like very quickly you do begin to miss it. Like, and it's, you know, it's more than just, it is, I know it's a cliche, the GAA's community, like, but it's kind of like, there's more than just the playing of football. You know, maybe down the lines, coaching is something that I'd be interested in when you know you definitely can't play at the level you're coaching at. But like, I'm out there and kind of, I might run the odd drill, or I might, you know, get involved in the background, or even be asked a question, or do a bit of free taking with a couple of the younger lads. And like, it probably only gives you 20% of the buzz that it would if you knew you were going to be taking them yourself, or, you know, if you knew you were. It's not the same for me at the moment, anyway. Yeah.
Paul, I was reading an article in the Irish Times, said it was titled "The Unluckiest Man in Ireland," and it was about some of the injuries you've had over the last few years. I was reading, it was 2 bad knee injuries, 3 ankle injuries, Achilles tendon, ruptured spleen, collapsed lung, and a ruptured bowel. Now, how in the name of God did you deal with all that?
Well, I suppose a lot of them were, I didn't, like, when I was probably 18, 19, when I had the first of those injuries that resulted in surgery, like, and I went up to Galway in college, and I didn't really, I suppose communication wasn't what it was now either, like, but I played football in college, and I took that seriously for 2 out of 3 years, like second and third year. I was injured for the freshers year, but I suppose like it was easier to take on the chin when things weren't going as well in Carlow. It was easier to opt out for a year, and I got in the kind of habit, I was playing soccer, and I used to love soccer, so I was playing soccer for a club in what would be the Premier Division in Carlow, say. So I was coming down, and it didn't require the same commitment to train and stuff, so I'd come down on weekends, and I knew I wasn't the, you know, the most reliable when it came to coming, like I tried to come down once or twice and train for the county, and it wasn't really working out, and it was just leading to kind of a fractious relationship. So I kind of opted out for a few years. So a few of those injuries were kind of during that period, and that was a little bit easier. I suppose the most serious one of them, and the one that's, I suppose, it hasn't affected me since until now with the decision not to play at the moment, but would have been the spleen, and you name 3 of them there, like, but the spleen, the lung and the bowel were all the kind of, I'd say they were the one thing. There were 2 surgeries in, say, 4 weeks, like, but that was the most innocuous thing, lads. It was like, I went out, I'd say a month before my leaving cert, and I remember I was studying away, doing a small bit anyway, and I was, it was a Sunday evening, and we'd actually gotten, I got a phone call with only 15 players. So I went out to play against Suncraft, and it was a Carlow man, Joe Hayden, that was over Suncraft at the time. And I went out to play against them, and I think it's Anthony Rainbow's club, I'm not sure. But anyway, were we intermediate or senior? I think it was our last year intermediate, we might have got up then, or maybe our first year senior in the club. But anyway, went out, I was to sub. They put me on at half time, and like an elbow, a real sunny evening, an elbow like out of nowhere. You keep running with the ball, you feel winded. And that's where that all came from. So that, I ended up, won't bore you with the details in between, but ended up, went to the hospital that night, and almost like, I'm not winded anymore, I feel fine, so I'm happy with a day off school the next day type of stuff. And then later on that night, it's kind of woke up in pain, and that's where it all, you know, it went. And I suppose it didn't get better. 3 weeks in hospital every day was worse, I'd say, until, because they fixed the spleen, and that was fine, but they missed, they either missed or caused a perforated bowel. So I'm in there, and I'm not getting any better, and I know my leaving cert is coming up, and I'm kind of thinking to myself, geez, am I going to postpone it now, or what will I try to do? And so about 2 or 3 weeks later, then they went exploratory surgery, found the bowel, but during that surgery, the lung collapsed. So that kept me there for another week. And then it was like 3 days before the leaving, so I just, but the gas thing is about it, I didn't do my leaving cert, like, and the prez, the school I was in Carlow, like, it was great crack, and there was no way I was heading. I was heading for at least 100 points less than what I actually eventually got a year later. Like, because it was just too much crack. It was very hard to kind of, I put it this way. I was doing ordinary level Irish. I did higher level Irish next year. That'll tell you how, you know, I was opting for the easy option. And, but yeah, and the other stuff was just all, I suppose, like wear and tear. Like the knees and ankles and yokes are just, I suppose they're hereditary or genetic, that stuff broke down. Like, but every time it does, you know yourself, you're out for, like, even a knee injury, you're out for kind of 6 weeks, but before you're back up to speed, it's probably 3 months. So yeah, they are hard to take. Like, and they're hard to take particularly because, like, I'm blessed in a way, the 4 or 5 years that, like, Thurlow and Poacher and Ricardo, the first 2 or 3 of those, we didn't make the strides we probably wanted to. We got consistency, which was our first aim, is to try win a couple of league games in a row and have something that works. And then when we kind of actually got going, I suppose I was back and got 2 years injury free, which was great. Whereas the first 2 years of that, I played basically 2 or 3 games. So it was great to get back, you know, for the part that everyone remembers, excuse me, which was good. Yeah, I was lucky in a sense.
And just as you mentioned, Turlock O'Brien and Poacher there, and I suppose I'll ask you, like, what was the culture like before they came in, and what did they change that made Carlo, I suppose, rise through the ranks as they did?
I suppose, in my experience, like, I played my very first training session, I was doing my Leaving Cert, actually. It was probably about a week before I ended up in hospital. I trained under Liam Hayes. And it was one training session. So, like, that's just, we'll say, the earliest that I was hoping to be involved. And then I played County Under 21 maybe 9 months after the splenectomy and that type of stuff. And then went back in with the seniors the year after. And, like, my experiences of lots of different setups were all different, obviously, because they're different managers and different people. And I think, to be honest, like, everyone tried their best and everyone used the knowledge that they had. But I'd never been exposed. The first time I was exposed was in college to kind of coaching as opposed to, like, drills or just, you know, improvement of skills as such. Like, and a lot of what they changed, I think, were subtle things that led to something big. Like Thurlow came in, and I remember, like, the first thing about Thurlow was that he held these open trials, these sevens games. So you probably got 2 or 3 lads, maybe not. So I was captain as one of them, said it was 7 teams, and I was kind of told to go off and get 6 lads, anyone I wanted from the county. So even lads who hadn't played football since school or whatever. We played these 7 tournaments over a number of Sundays. Like, and usually Carlo would hold trials, but, like, you're not going to get, you might get, they're never open and they're kind of, you kind of know who's going to be on the panel anyway. So we definitely got numbers and young lads and stuff that we wouldn't have gotten. And then Thurlow had 2 years, and I think, you know, he took it very far from, it might look like it on paper, but being involved in it, trying to remember back, like, I suppose the biggest changes were that he held the panel together. And I think a lot of it was, like, Thurlow, as you should see even his Twitter page ranting, like, he's passionate about Carlo and everything Carlo, it's not just football, but that does mean something to lads, like, because he knows my family, he knows my grandparents, he knows everyone's, and, like, it means an awful lot that his man management probably kept people where they are. So, you know, if someone felt like throwing the ties out of the pram, it's very hard to do it when you're dealing with a very nice man, you know, and he hasn't done anything intentionally against you. And then, I suppose, brought in Poacher, kicked it on another step where it probably took. Like, I always look at teams progressing now and I'm wondering, when did they start that? Because I'd no experience of it before, but, like, we started something that probably took 18 months to, I'd say, perfect, to get to a stage where we were as good as we could have been at it, given the personnel we had. And, like, I that's what Poacher brought to it. And I think because he brought that element that helped us to win games, like, people want to play for Carlo and still do, like, young lads want to play for Carlo. Like, an awful lot of people my age, I wasn't the only one when I was 18, 19, that might have gone in for a year, out for a year, in for half a year. But, like, there seems to be an awful lot less to that now. And I suppose it's a culture of gradual improvement, a culture of, you know, if you stick with it, that you will get there. And that playing for Carlo is something that you should be proud of, as opposed to, for years, I suppose, like, I don't know what year it was, but I remember, I think I was involved in the squad earlier in the year, and then Carlo played in the B Championship, and, like, there was the incentive basically going around was, lads, there'll be a grant for this. And you're basically ringing lads and going, there'll be money if we play this game. You know, ringing around like maybe a school's team who don't have the lads, wondering why such a lad isn't in today. That's the kind of way it was, like. And that's probably the lowest low that we had, like. But I suppose since then, I don't see it going back to where it was. I think the football is in a good place now. The most important thing for Carlo at the moment is, I suppose, you're looking at replacing, like, a generation there of lads we have kind of from 29 to 34 that, you know, gradually need to be replaced over a period of time. And you're hoping that, like, you know, you're hoping that that's managed well and properly. Don't ask me what well and properly is, but you just hope that, you know, it's kind of, that it becomes a fluid process. Like I said, you've lots of lads that want to play for Carlo, and that you keep them there, and that it doesn't, because all the work has been done the last 6 years, that you'd hope that it continues to be done.
Yeah, like at the top level there, obviously Turlo and Stephen Poach did phenomenal work by the stands, but and like you said, you're trying to replace now those older guys. What's the underage structure like in Carlow?
The underage structure is a lot better than, say, like, go back to when you're looking at 15 years ago when I was even minor or whatever. Like, I suppose there was no kind of academies, and every county seems to have them now where they have, I don't know if they're 11s, 13s, 15s or what. I think they might start at 13s. But Carlow have a thing called the Carlow Colts, and it's kind of, it's a rebranded thing with a different crest. And like, we trained in Carlow IT with the partnership the GA have with it, and we trained in Carlow IT for a couple of years on Friday evenings, and like, you'd see 70, 80 lads under 11, and maybe another 70, 80 under 13 and under 9, which is brilliant. Like, now I know obviously that gets cut down, or you know, they may get put into development panels, but like, that was never a thing. And I suppose I'm looking at it from a distance. I've done the odd session, which is very easy to do. You know yourself, you go in and do any odd session, you're a fresh voice and you're going to get a reaction out of lads. But in general, like, all these sessions have big numbers. They've a huge amount of lads that, like, might have three or four mentors on teams, lads who want to be there, lads who've given up time. And I know it's little things to younger people, but like, I remember, like, you were mad for gear when you were younger, and like, stuff like that is just I remember being told, like, I was with a Carlow senior panel at one stage, and I remember being told, now I did come in late to the panel and hold my hands up, I probably refused an offer earlier in the year, but I remember coming in and we were going to play Derry in the qualifiers, and I was told to go get a tracksuit off a previous fella who dropped off the panel from my own club, like, and like, I was kind of just agreed, but then just laughed afterwards, and I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. But like, I know I'm kind of rambling here with some of these answers, but basically I'm saying that, like, the stuff that's important to young lads is there, and the stuff that they maybe don't see that is important, or they don't realise that important, is there. And I can see that now looking back. But the stuff I can remember was important to me when I was a young lad. You know, getting games, getting loads of games, getting time on the field, not being left. You play your four or five games of counties around you and being left aside because you're from an intermediate club or whatever it might be. It seems to be that it's been done quite well. Certainly from a football perspective anyway, which is all I'd really, really see.
Well, that's great. Like, and that's all you want from a team that has done so well, like yourself. If you guys can leave a legacy behind you, and then you guys are, like, you guys set the goals and set the aspirations of the young lads, they can say, oh, look, Broderick and Brendan Murphy and all, they were down coaching us, or we saw them play. And it just inspires the next generation, which is, you see about every county, whether it be football or hurling, that one big team will always inspire the next generation that come through, maybe it could be 5, 6, 7, 8 years later. But look, but it sounds like you guys are doing that down below, and long may it last.
Yeah, there's like a good friend of mine, you know, Christopher Bulger, is manager of the minors, and like, I talked to him. We drove up to the Games Development Conference back in January up in Croke Park. We're driving in the car together, and he was saying, like, he said, Paul, he had maybe 45, 50 fellas, and he was kind of, I don't know, once I fight with the county board, but he was having conversations about trying to keep them all on board and maybe even have them do a bit of fundraising themselves so that they could afford to have the same gear, because obviously, like, that's a lot to try and fund. But it's great that is a conversation that's being had, and I doubt it's, you know, maybe prior to the last 4 years, I doubt it was ever a conversation that was being had before. Do you know what I mean? I want to keep these 40 lads as opposed to trying to knit 20 together, which is super, like.
I was just talking with Stephen Poacher there, Paul, and he was on with us before, as you may know, and he was talking about some of the great sessions he's had that year, on and off the pitch.
I was about to say, you're talking football sessions, really. And it was a couple of great sessions. All right, he probably killed me now, but you're fucking. There was days I remember we played Tyrone, and we were out obviously after losing to Tyrone, and I think that game was a Sunday. And it was Tuesday afternoon, and he was still down in Carlow, and but like, ah, no, look, he was a great man. In fairness, like, he, one thing he did is he always, you know, you could say a lad could love a pint and love a bit of crack, but still, because you know, because they're not his people or traditionally not from here, like, that wasn't the case with Stephen. He genuinely became kind of part of Carlow and would know people. Like, you know, he if he wasn't staying in my house, he'd be staying at Turlow's house, and I had to find somewhere to stay on the team anyway. But you know, he became part of it. And a lot of lads, like myself included, would still be friendly with him. Still, I played golf with him actually a couple of weeks ago. Even you know, as far away as he still is, he'd still be in contact, like, because he he did, and I suppose he wasn't too far in age from, like, Stephen is what, he's 50, is he? he's about Stephen's 40, like, so he wasn't too far in age from the older crew, like, who got along very well with him. So yeah, it's a right bit of the crack.
It won't be surprised if he came back someday as the Carlow manager, maybe sometime in the future. I know there's only a new management in there now, but maybe down the line some stage.
Yeah, no, I'm not fully sure. It wouldn't be a surprise, and he'd be welcome with open arms. Like, anyone I was talking to, when I, like, you know, you wouldn't know what to believe, but when you read things in papers there during the summer and stuff, like, and I'd never really ask him straight out, because again, that's like, you know, people don't like to put stuff in text messages, and the way things are nowadays, like, I wouldn't ask him. But I know he still has a passion for Carlow, still has a love for Carlow, and that, like, he wanted, you know, I could see from even conversations with him, you could read between the lines that, like, he wanted to be involved with Carlow at some stage again. Like, yeah. I suppose circumstances at the time when he left, it was probably the right thing at the time. But then, you know, time passes, and then it, you know, where Carlow are at the moment, and the fact that most of the lads that he would have played with, all bar one or two, are probably still there. So he'd have the room immediately if he came back, you know, at the moment, I'm saying. But yeah, there's, like I said, it is exciting. There's new management at the moment. There's you've Noel Carew, and Gerard Brennan. Yeah, so, like, you know, it's exciting that it's something new after such a long time. And I suppose the lads, I think it's 2 years, but it's two and a bit, really, as in to get this as a kind of a warm-up, and then it's 2 years. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, it's 2 years that could be fruitful for Carlow, in the sense of there's a lot of good young lads, like, coming through. You've like Dermot Walsh, Ross Dunphy, Conor Crowley, Jordan Morrissey. Like, these lads are, like, you know, they've won everything at a juvenile level within Carlow, and like Jordan has won a Sigerson with DCU, capable of leading any team. And, like, it's exciting. There's a good mix at the moment, but like I said, you've those lads who kind of, they're very young, and then you've the lads who are very old, and you do have lads in between, but it's about gelling that together and making sure that transition kind of happens absolutely as possible. But yeah,
have the new management team been in touch as regards how they want to set up, how they want to play? Has there been any sort of depth like that being spoken about?
I haven't had any contact at all with them. No, I believe they've been in contact with like Sean Gannon and Brendan Murphy would have been joint captains last year. So I was only talking to Sean in passing there a couple of weeks ago, and he said they've been in contact on the phone. So I don't know if they've met up or anything since. You know, when club championship comes around, you tend to, lads will be friends with, but they're off the clubs. It goes 3 or 4 weeks and you kind of, you know, the conversation lines go cold for a few weeks. But I'd imagine, you know, they seem enthusiastic enough. I'd imagine they're in contact with who they need to be as such.
So, were you surprised when Turnock O'Brien resigned earlier this year, or was it something that was on the cards?
I don't really know if it was on the cards. I know that Turlo, you know, he's had his own issues and stuff with his back, and, like, it isn't easy going out and, you know, standing out in the cold for 3 or 4 months in a row. And like, I don't know if that kind of played a little bit of a. Suppose if it had an effect on his decision. But I suppose you also have to look at what he's given. Like, Turlough, from a management point of view, yeah, he's given 6 years. But, like, you talk to Turlough after, say, we might play our first league game on a Sunday against Sligo, and you might know you're playing Leitrim next week. No, Leitrim look likely to go up this year. But you might know you're playing them next week, and Turlough would say to you on Sunday morning, like, you're just in passing conversation. Like, you'd have to drag it out of him. He wouldn't be coming in saying, this is what I do for ye, type of thing. But, like, he would have been up in Leitrim a championship on Friday and Saturday night. And not only that, but would have watched maybe an intermediate game and a senior game both nights, himself and Tommy Wogan. And, like, that has to take its toll. I don't mean its toll physically. Yes, obviously physically and stuff. But, like, you know, on a family and like, on life in general, like, no different than it would have on Stephen driving up and down. I think he probably looked at the opportunity of, you know, there was an indefinite nature to when we might have been going back. And I think he gave Carlow ample time to get somebody. And in fact, like, if you look at, I suppose, the fact that we were out of the league, he might have seen the league out if we were still in it. But I think, given the circumstances, like, I don't think, while from the outside it might have looked like abandonment in the middle of the season, it's certainly not how it was felt or received in Carlow. I think people really appreciated what he did and thought that it was a good time to go. Because if you look at the calendar as it is now, I know it's not set for next year, but it could very easily be, like, league championship and then pre-season and into league again. depending on how the GAA choose to do it. So like, there is no option. Had he stayed then, there's no option to go probably till next summer. And probably didn't intend to stay in 2021 anyway. So that's the way I'd look at it.
Yeah. Well, under him, you had some great days. One of the biggest ones being in 2018 when you put Kildare at the Leinster quarterfinal stage. I don't think anyone's going to forget that commentary from KCLR, and Horst Lawler's name has now gone down in folklore, I'd say.
Yeah. The funny thing was, Horst, he scored the goal, and if you look at the footage of it, just after the goal, he nearly falls. So there was a good bit of crack about that, like Horst falling and stuff. But it almost would have been gas if he did, like, surely. We would have had someone going to give some photos and yokes of it. But yeah, no, it was a great day. It was one of those days, look, sure, you know yourself from the stats, like, as in, we didn't miss. Everything clicked. And I suppose it had been everything we'd been working on. As the game progressed, it's still hard to believe, to be honest with you, even at half time. We've been 3 and 4 points up on teams. Jeez, we were only 3 points within Dublin at half time. But, you know, so like, you're kind of pinching yourself and going. But then we went out and I suppose got the next few and went kind of, held it maybe 4 points up with 15 minutes left. And you're going, lads, we could do this, like, you know. And even the magnitude of it, I remember, I'm trying to remember his name now. Flynn, he was number 7. Was it Kevin Flynn?
Kevin Flynn.
Yeah, Kevin. And Kevin said to me, like, it was only, we got the goal, like, and the ball went back down the field, Kildare's end. And he looks at me, like, and he just said, geez, this is fucking masterful, isn't it? And I just, like, my words were like, you've no idea. Like, as much as you believe in every game, and that's part of sports mentality, like, you believe you're going to win. We believe we were going to beat Dublin, Tyrone, Monaghan. It's no different. Like, I know people laugh at that, but anyone who's played sport knows, like, you have to, that's your positive mentality kind of going out. And, well, we believe we'd win this, like, I think Horst's goal was the icing on the cake. I was like, no, they can't come back from this. They just can't. Like, I was like, you know, even if we could see 3-0 type of thing, I was thinking. But, yeah, it was the magnitude of it was huge. It was sent ripples all over the county, like,
But it wasn't just a result, it was the performance as well. Now, I know you say you didn't miss, but like, on top of that, like, there's some serious football played. You put up a great score as well. So it wasn't a case of, like you said in the club game, 6-5 or something like that. It was high scoring. What, you kicked 20 in total, obviously, 117, wasn't it? Or 214?
Yeah, 214.
Like, that doesn't come easy. Any team that scores 214 against anyone, like, you'd be fancying yourselves to win. That's not a, like, it's the total performance that you got out of yourselves that day was absolutely credible, you know?
Yeah, it's something, I suppose. It's one of those, I say it's one of those days, but like, we got a fortuitous goal, so did they. And you'd look at, like, I suppose, had neither of those goals gone in, right, reduce each score margin by 3 points. Had I missed 3 frees, but then you look at, like, they got a couple of worldly scores. Cribben got a couple of scores, like, one on the left, belter, one on the right. Yeah, like, and you'd look at them and go, right, they still did kick scores. It was probably the only thing that, like, in order for a plan to work, you need what you're predicting is going to happen against the plan to work too. And I suppose on that day it did. You know, had we been playing a different team, Laois maybe, it might not have, you know. And that's not to say that, like, you know, you put Laois above Kildare, but teams have teams that they kind of feel that their system will work against them and it doesn't. And I think, yeah, like, I didn't know after the game that we had missed. You know, you're not counting those things when you're playing against. No. You don't know you haven't kicked a wide. And even when people said it, I was thinking, I'm trying to rewind back in my head, because I was thinking of the missed kick three that led to a goal type of thing. Now, Ledger will tell you, put the ball in the box, but but basically, like, and worse again, Foley will tell you he scored it. you look at it and you're like, it did. It used to irk me a little bit, like, when that's the only narrative that was coming out of it, because we did play very good football. And even in the last few minutes when we were only four, before Arsenal's goal, like, when we were only 4 points up, you know, many times there, like, you will, Monaghan game being a perfect example, like, one of our mantras for that, like, was 9-all, 9 to go. And we kept saying it all that year, like, it was 9-all, 9 to go against Monaghan. And, like, we threw the match away. Now, we say we threw the match away, like, had we lost by one or to a worldly score, like, we lost to a goal where it was very easy to pinpoint mistakes that we made. And I suppose our thing was that we, you know, on top of every tactic or plan that may not work out, that's kind of the mantra of, like, you know, that's not what going to be, it's not going to be the last time we lose it, do you know what I mean? So, like, we were very impressed with how we held it together for the whole 70 minutes, like, which, you know, which we hadn't done in lots of the games. But, yeah.
That was obviously one huge day. I know you've been loud previously. But what would you take if I could give you one day back? Would it be that, or be the promotion?
I'd have to go to promotion, to be honest with you, if I could live it again. Like of the days, I probably had a better day and it was sunny and all against Kildare. And I didn't play particularly bad against, but it wasn't one of those days where you were like, you know, you'd pick five other players that shone, and we said, you know, you wouldn't have won without them up in Antrim. But it was the feeling of, I suppose, the promotion gives you the belief that these other things like the Kildare game can happen. And I don't think Kildare game happens without promotion type of thing. But the promotion was this type of thing. We'd gotten close. Like, I remember playing, I don't know if it was 2007 or 8, and we'd won a couple of games, maybe three, and we Tipperary the last day for a chance to get into second place. But we wouldn't have known this playing the game. It was just that a couple of the top teams lost. And I remember we were in the Talbot Hotel afterwards and we were talking, and lads were looking at the table or got news at the table and thinking, geez, if we had won that, I think we lost by a couple of points. But it was always that way, even the years we got somewhat close. And that might have meant we finished fifth, but if you get me, a win might have jumped us up to second. And like, there was always a story, or two or three stories in cases like where, like, you know, we could have done this if. But I think the promotion was just one that, like, it always seemed too far away. It was nearly disbelief. Whereas by the time Kildare came around, you fully believed we can do this, like, if, you know, things go to plan.
There was kind of a lazy journalism, especially by a Leash man who has a podcast of his own, who used to criticise the Carlow team at the time for their, I suppose, their over-defensive style. Was that something that maybe got on the players' nerves at the time?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't actively listen to it. I used to, but I suppose the narrative around then, it was very easy to see his hate. I'll give you two stories, actually. One of them was when he was actually off for a week, Conal, the fellow that works with him, interviewed Poacher and made no kind of secret of it, as in to say, Poacher, you wouldn't be on it if Colin was here, kind of thing. And, you know, I think, and look, part of this is just natural. Like, I actually did a kind of a live, it wasn't a podcast, it was a live thing in my school where he was invited in. And because I was an inter-county player at the time, the only one working in the school, and myself, him, Eddie Brennan, and there was two others sat on the stage. But anyway, the point of the story, what I'm saying is, look, I got along well with him that day. We had a right bit of crack, and you'd be kind of similar, you know, you'd be chatting away the same jokes and stuff. Like. But then I hear this, a lot of what you're talking about there, and I think it was maybe, I suppose, when he was younger, Carlo were never near them, and it was possibly that. I don't really know what it was, like, but it was like the narrative certainly wasn't true in that, yeah, Carlo were more defensive than, if you look at it, you go, yeah, there's players behind the ball, but there was certainly more teams doing it, and there's days you could pick out teams that you would consider very attacking, Dublin, and they'll have everyone back. And I think, to be honest with you, we were at our worst, or certainly we were foiled, like maybe Leash got the better of us, they figured us out again in those days, and they're probably the games you watch. Like, how many Carlo games would anyone outside of Carlo be watching, really? Do you know what I mean? Or be at? So, like, if you were looking at those, I wouldn't blame someone for thinking this is, you know, this is putrid. Like, particularly because we were behind and we still look defensive. We look back at that and go, how, you know, how did we not kind of get something going during that? But yeah, the other one was I actually listened recently. I saw that Ger Brennan, I keep calling him Des. Ger Brennan has Ger Brennan has
who's Desi Brennan?
Des Brennan plays golf in Carlo, and I played a match against him last year. That's the only Des Brennan I know. I think there's a Des Brennan sold carpets here one time as well.
But, that could have been a relation to Gerard. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. I must ask him. But yeah, there was the interview. I know he was probably being facetious and joking and all that, but like the interview was only 10, 12 minutes long. And it was just, I was interested to hear what Gerard Brennan had to say about Carlo football. And he was very positive, saying, look, I won't be, you know, throwing the baby out with the backwater. He said, they've done a lot of good things, and we try and modify what they've done to, you know, to progress it a step. And I suppose the Leash man you're alluding to was kind of saying that, look, I'm going to find it very, now that you're one of our own, Gerard, I'm going to find it very hard to hate Carlo. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, I know he's joking and stuff, but there would be, there would kind of be that narrative. And look, to be honest, it's a lot of the time I listen to it, it's chewing them for the brain, as I say. So when I did listen to it, it was only kind of something, you know, was on in the background. But yeah, that'd be my opinion on that. I mean,
it seems to be more of a rivalry between Poacher and himself more than anything else, didn't it?
Funny you should mention it, yeah, because he did. He finds it hard not to bring him up. I think he brought him up in that actual interview as well. So I think it is. And look, there's probably, I'd say if the two of them met, they probably you know, they'd have a right bit of crack if they left the Leash Carlo thing aside, like, you know.
Can you imagine that podcast?
I can't imagine that podcast.
Like 4 hours long.
I'm still not undecided. But yeah, look, it's never nice when things like that go kind of when they go too far, you know. But it's probably you know, I wouldn't imagine there'd be a whole lot about it now because, well, I suppose Porter's out of here and it's less of a concern for them.
Yeah. One last one for me, Paul. So the last player, the best player you played against, and the best player you played with over the last few years is one I like to ask, or maybe the best marker you came up against.
The best marker I've come up against, I probably have to say Shane Redmond. And I know that, like, people often say, like, Shane Redmond's a club man of mine, but like, he's a Bears grip less, and I'm fine if I can get out of that circle where his arms are. If I can get out of there, I'm like, right, I have a chance. But if he gets a hand on you, he's a freakish strength. You know, that's kind of, it's very hard to get away from. Another notable mention with Manny Arau in training will be Chris Crowley, who's gone up to, he's now living up in Armagh. Like, notoriously, lads were trying to avoid him in training. And I mean that in a kind of a marker sense. He was a pest, and that's the biggest compliment I could pay him. Like, you know, if we needed someone that needed marking, it didn't matter who it was. Like, Chris was put onto him. I remember he marked, Pal played St. Vincent's, and he marked Dermot Connolly. He was black carded early, and then he was put on Connolly again when we played Dublin. He was put on. Was it Connolly? Anyway, it was always one you'd pick out. You pick out their strongest, and even when we played the bigger teams, like, you'd always kind of sit back and have a comfort knowing that lad's not going to have a good day, like, as in, you know, whatever corner forward it is. And it was the Kerry accent he had and the stuff he used to say. Like, he'd never get angry, so like, he used to ask the most simple questions to lads, and he used to tell me about them afterwards, and we'd be having a laugh, like, the stuff he used to say to lads. But you couldn't call it sledging, because he'd be asking questions like that would completely distract you. You know what I mean? He could find out something as mad as his father was a vegetable farmer, and that's what he, you know. That's not actually an example, but it was mad stuff. Like, and lads, everyone that was in Ricardo would kind of say the same. Like, he had the quirkiest sense of humor. Like, I just think that kind of put with the stuff that he could do on the field. Like,
what did he ask you?
he actually used to say here a bit when he was, because he was like, Chris was doing he was practically living here for a while, like, because he was down, you know, he was kind of pulled all over the place, and he met a girl from Armagh, and that's where he's gone to now, so that's why he's not with us anymore. But we would have had a right bit of crack, sure. Like, we were nearly too close, I suppose, for any of it to affect me, because I knew a sense of humour, but it would definitely be something to throw you, and all that type of thing. And you'd look at him and just go, I could imagine lads even looking at him. You know, he might even ask a lad, like, if he heard this now, he'd go, Paul, stop talking. But he might even ask a lad something, you know, like, something like about his socks or about his calves or something, like, you know, what sort of exercises do you do to get those calves? They're just quirky out, but it's really hard to say. That's the best player I played against. You know, the most unique player and the player I think that anything he does, I've never seen anybody replicate. Like, I could pick lads from playing in Galway, and there's plenty of lads that I played with in Galway that, like, are playing for Galway now, played for Mayo and stuff like that, and they're exceptional players. But I suppose I didn't play that long with them, like a year or two. But like for me, like Sean Murphy from Carlow, I've just never ever witnessed anything like him. He's just the most unique kind of style player that I've come across anyway. Like, and so on, assuming, like, he just doesn't, you know, I know I'm getting into personality there more than anything, like, more than football, but like, he just, when he burst on the scene, he was with the hurlers, and then he burst on the scene with the footballers, and like, the stuff he could do, I'd never seen anyone do, and I haven't seen anyone do. Like, I've seen fast lads, but I've never seen that speed and that power and that kind of, you know, usually when people have maybe a couple of those traits, there might be an ego to manage. You know, you'd have to build Sean up to give him an ego. He didn't have an ego, because it was all, like, I remember we were going over to play Dublin. I won't keep you too long. We're going over to play Dublin. We got off the bus, and it was just at the county grounds. And the two of us, as you would, you kind of need to do a number one there, getting off the bus before. I'm not sure what swear words I can say or whatever, but we two of us.
Whatever you like, whatever you like.
We went to go for a piss up against the wall at the county grounds anyway, or in around at the back, and he just goes to me, well, lad, are you nervous? And I said, ah, Sean, I am a bit, to be honest. Like, we'd coming off the Wexford win. And I said to you, he goes, not at all. He says, it's another game of football. But like, he doesn't, the same lad, I remember we played Monaghan and played Leitrim, and the real sunny days, like, and he'd be, you know, he'd be, genuinely, we'd warm up in the hurling club, which is next door to Dr. Cullen, or Network Cullen Park, and he'd, like, he'd be asleep on the ground there. Now, he might have done a bit of farming or whatever work that morning, but, like, he'd lie down and he'd nod off for 20 minutes. While we're, you know, the time when lads might arrive at coffee, having a chat or whatever, before you're talking out, you're just maybe feeling the pitch, and he'd be over there asleep, maybe up against the pole. He's a breath of fresh air to Cardiff football, and I'm the last.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Like, the way you hear players go on these days, just to hear something like that, it's just so, it puts it on perspective, really. Yeah, like,
it's refreshing, like, it is.
Yeah,
it
really is. Not a game of football, you know. Yeah.
You could do, he probably, you know, he's so unassuming. I'm sure he's been offered plenty of podcasts because people tell plenty of stories about him and all in good nature. But, like, if you did genuinely get him for an hour, like, you wouldn't. It's getting the words out of him will be the only problem, but like he's not going to tell the stories about himself, I suppose. But if you had him in a room for an hour, like, and just, and you had him even reacting to them, you'd get a fierce laugh out of it.
Come here, did you pick him for your sevens tournament team?
No, it wasn't. I wouldn't have even really known Sean. I knew him from, I remember a friend of mine, Rory Byrne. I remember years ago, Rory was playing intermediate as a junior with his club there at Rogan. They played Fenna, which would be Sean's club. And that would have been Fenna's first team. And he just kept saying to me, oh man, I've never seen that like this lad. As in, we need to mark him. So like, you imagine, this is a fella playing Junior A, but it's a third team for his club, playing against Sean Murphy, who later goes on to be man of the match against Dublin only maybe 3 years later. You know, when he's burst on the scene, and this fella's trying to describe what this lad is doing to him at a junior level. And I'm saying, ah, Rory, will you cop on to yourself? Do you know what I mean? Type of thing. So I didn't really know anything. That was all I knew about Sean at the time, because he was in with the hurlers. So I assumed that's the only bit of football that he'd interested in playing. But as it turns out, he seems to love the football setup. But it wasn't one of my picks, but I'm glad someone did.
And come here, will you get us Sean Murphy's number then?
That's no problem, it's no problem, but I don't know if he'll come on.
Yeah, Paul, we'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for coming on. It was great crack.
Yeah, no, that's lovely meeting you, lovely chatting to you, lads.
Cheers, Paul. Thanks.
Cheers, Paul.
Talk to you.